But this administration from day one said, we're going to implement the Supreme Court's Bostock decision that says sex protections include LGBTQ people. We're going to put forward briefs in these challenges to these anti-trans cases. And the Justice Department has stepped up and said that these policies that we talked about earlier are both wrong and have sided with the LGBTQ community in those court cases. And obviously, over the next several months and years, we'll see more from this administration to step up and to stand out for trans people's rights, for all people's rights across this country. But it's really, I think, critical that we recognize the power that the executive branch has in standing up for trans people and how significant it would be for our community if in 2025 we don't have a pro-equality president.
Sarah, we're going to have to leave it there. Democratic State Senator Sarah McBride running for Delaware's open House seat. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. Thanks for joining us.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Development and Events Committee meets on the third Monday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio and the Jazz Society of Oregon are proud to present the 43rd annual Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, Friday, July 14 through Sunday, July 16 at Cathedral Park in North Portland. Jazz, blues, soul, and Latin musicians will rock the park for 3 days. Curtis Delgado, Ural Thomas, Yak Attack, Chichito Valdez, or just a few of the 15 bands performing this year. That's the 43rd annual Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, Portland's longest running community event. July 14, 15, and 16, under the St. John's Bridge in North Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. KBOO.
Good morning. You are listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO FM 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis. We are broadcasting on this day live, Monday, the 10th of July, 2023, from the studios and points within Portland.
From the ether.
And from the ether. The voices you hear are Cecil and Celeste. Yeah, you. I'm looking at you. You look like you're just coming in from parts unknown.
Oh, that's just the Northern Lights, the Aurora Borealis in my background. One of my favorite images.
Wonderful.
So, yeah, it adds a measure of grandeur to this day. Good morning, all. Excuse the hoarse voice. It's still bigger. Last week, I had a bit of an advantage because we were, well, it was my intention to speak on two results coming down from courts, and specifically a key finding or decision coming down from the Supreme Court of the United States with regard to the affirmative action claim and relevant to Harvard University and the University of North Carolina. Well, it's been a week. I didn't make it. But it gave us more time to kind of see how this is playing out. And in discussion with Cecil, I thought it was really helpful for us to look at how a major pillar in American life is, and I should qualify that, I should say United States of American, no, life, mm-hmm. be very specific here, is being challenged and how we might rally to its defense. And that is education. And, you know, in sum, we know education gives us hope for the future. And we know that it's important because it is a battle that we see fought on so many different levels by different people all across this globe to ensure that not only do human beings continue to exist, but that we exist for quality. We do more than just exist. We thrive. And education is something that all walks of life look to as a game changer, as a ground leveler. But with a few weeks ago, our findings here, the affirmative action efforts that have been made by various educational facilities, as well as President Biden's plan for student loan forgiveness, were struck down. Pardon?
No. Struck down, you said. Correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. And so I thought it was really important for us to talk about what are our potential ways we can respond to this. Now, since that happened, like I said, this was my plan for doing last week. At that time, there had not been any legal challenges to that decision. But what has happened since then is there has been a suit brought against the Harvard University's legacy program. And so that was one of the things that I had wanted to suggest. Not that it was my idea, but it was something that had been mentioned at the initial release of the decision because the legacy program had been left intact as though there was no whiff of discrimination involved in that. And so I thought, okay, well, what are some other things we can do? But also just to discuss, you know, what we can do both on the grassroots level in terms of encouraging our electeds, maybe something we could do to encourage corporate engagement, just various things, and just to kind of rally and not allow ourselves to be discouraged, disheartened by this. Anything you want to add to that, Cecil?
Well, there's a lot, as you suggest, to unravel in the Supreme Court decisions, not only in terms of how it impacts education, and you referenced the affirmative action and the student debt issues, but also one can see this as the continuation of the unraveling of not only precedent, but also the unravelings of a sense of where we are as a nation. Not only we can look at the last couple of Supreme Court seasons and see the unraveling of a moderate or liberal sense of being. And so not only in terms of the affirmative action and the student debts, but also the reversal of Roe v. Wade and other issues, which have proven not only the strength and the fortitude of decades-old attack upon a liberal consensus by conservatives. So we are certainly, if anyone had any doubts about whether we are living in a different era, certainly the post-Warren, not only what was the Supreme Court Justice after Earl Warren, Berger, and even the Rehnquist Court has suddenly blossomed into not only a conservative majority, but a conservative supermajority, which will have an impact on this nation's life for decades. Give us your thoughts in terms of how do we respond, particularly in terms of education, as Celeste laid out, in terms of responding to how we respond to the goal, the desire, the wish, the dream of education and access to education, and also talking about the attack. Not only on affirmative action, but the response, as Celeste laid out, in terms of the attack on the legacy policies of many universities. We can talk more about the individual Supreme Court's responses and be interested in your responses. But let me give you the phone numbers so that we can hear what you have to say. Our phone numbers are 503-231-8187. Have you been paying attention to the Supreme Court decisions of this last session? And where do we go from here, particularly in terms of education? 503-231-8187. And let's hear what you have to say.
Indeed. And, you know, one of the things I didn't get, so I'm going to ambush you here a little bit, but I thought it might be helpful for us to share just a few little excerpts from the Justice Brown dissenting opinion that you had shared with me, because I thought that was eloquent. I mean, it's nothing we haven't said before. It's nothing that hasn't said before, but I think that coupled with the fact that for a lot of people who have supported the idea that we're supposed to be equal, but haven't really felt how viscerally any attack on any of those supports are, I think this sums it up beautifully. Let me see. It was, what was Ari's last name? Let me look at that. Oh, yes. Okay, with the beat. Okay.
Ketanji Brown Jackson dissent from the affirmative action ruling, 29-page, eloquent
very.
Dissent. And Celeste is going to... And actress Alfre Woodward reads it out, which is kind of strange, you know, when I think about it. I like, okay, I'm going to actually read I'm actually going to read what a justice on the Supreme Court say, and I'm going to have a acclaimed actress read, which points to the fact not only the eloquence of Justice Brown Jackson writing, but is a key to what impact she may have not only on this session but in the years ahead. And we do have a caller, so we'll just tease you with that, with Ketanji Brown Jackson's opinion. But first, let's go to our caller. Yes. And good morning, James. How are you this morning?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. You guys share the same economic and political philosophy as the Nazis, which makes you white supremacists.
Okay.
Well, that's really interesting.
Let's go to.
I don't feel like talking about that today, so thank you very much.
Let's go to Santiago. Good morning, Santiago. Santiago, are you there? We might have lost Santiago.
Oh. Hey, good morning. Oh. How are you?
I'm well. Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, so I think the real thing here is that I really feel like the biggest problem is that people just aren't upset enough about anything. I really have a problem with a lot of other, you know, because the thing is that, like, we don't recognize readily, especially those of us with a fair modicum of privilege, whether you're, you know, like, rich, white, you know, or, you know, like, or some combination of those, like, we don't, or straight, you know, we don't recognize readily that, you know, when the rights of those who are marginalized or infringed upon, we don't readily see that as an issue because it doesn't affect us. And I think that, you know, because, you know, the rich white cis folks have essentially made a media empire that coddles them and makes them feel good about even, like, just, you know, blasé reforms that, you know, like, they just, stuff like this doesn't even register, you know. And then we've got so many people who are just hypnotized by that, you know, the people that would be more upset about four people getting crushed under the weight of their own hubris, literally and figuratively, matters more to people than a ship full of several hundred refugees being stranded in the ocean and sinking, you know, that somehow are... We have more in common with rich folks who care nothing about us than, you know, poor folks who, you know, live down the street from us. I really feel at this point it's more about narrative than it is about facts. Yes. You know, like the fact
that, it's always been about narrative. I so agree with you, but it's always been about narrative. We have to fight to get the facts before it. That's the challenge. And well, you know, there's part of what you said is reflected in a little micro headline and an article I was looking at some time ago, and it says the facts about affirmative action didn't change, but the court did. And I think those are the kinds of things we need to focus on, not just the decision that came down from the Supreme Court, but the mechanics of how these various decisions, just like Cecil mentioned, you know, earlier, how they're being re-characterized, re-examined, disassembled, and be aware that this is a strategy of the right, and that we have to just stay vigilant. One of the problems with the left, the progressive, the liberal, however we want to characterize, you know, ourselves, is that we will rest on laurels, and we should never rest on laurels.
Well, I mean, I think what's really important to remember is that the Democratic Party, if it were in any other country, would be a far right party. So I think progressives are left ish, but Democrats are definitely not. And I think, you know, I think that's part of what resting on the laurels is that we think that the Democrats are some opposing party. I think people would be a lot more upset if they really recognized and understood that it was Joe Biden who got students locked into their debt in the first place. Most people don't realize that he's out here trying to shave off 10,000, maybe 20,000 if you're generous, when he locked students into hundreds of thousands. So it's like he's trying to create relief for a problem that didn't exist before he made it exist. You know, I mean,
Yeah, that's true, but I'm not a Democrat or a Republican. I'm a registered.
Oh, neither am I.
I'm not saying it's that reason. What I want to say is, it still affects us sometimes because we don't realize how that perspective shift makes us seem a little bit more center than we need to be sometimes. Yes, sometimes we need to look and figure out, what is the best position on this particular policy or issue? Maybe a centrist position is better. But when it comes to trying to combat the far right extreme politics that are coming out of the Republican Party, regardless of your economic or educational level, then we have to look at, maybe that means I need to have a further left shift. You build a bridge so you can talk to the people, you know, you don't get ignorant like Marjorie Taylor Greene and said, don't talk to the Democrats, they're communists. You know, no, we have to talk. That conversation is important, but we need to also look at how we're being forced to the right by some of these recharacterizations of policies or issues and move further to the left. So I'm agreeing with you. I think I'm just articulating it slightly different.
I think, too, recognizing that, centric, you know, because I always kind of feel like I think we should be I don't even think centrist is the right word because, I think you're right. You know, building bridges is important. You know, there's an axiom that I kind of live by is, you know, be kind to people, but be ruthless with institutions. But the problem is that we've got a lot of people, you know, especially who are burgeoning leftists who mistake the people for the institutions. And so we can't have, we have a hard time with dialogue on that end. But the other side, you know, it's realizing that, you know, and it's not, in realizing that it's not really so much like Republican or Democrat, but the idea that of like American exceptionalists. That, you know, they are speaking from a place of protecting the institution by attacking people. You know, they don't see what's wrong with the institution. They simply see that the institution is under attack. That's why we have these attacks on affirmative action, these attacks on LGBTQ rights, attacks on cultural studies, because they want to protect the institution at all costs because all of their eggs are in that basket and they don't even know what they're fighting for. You know, if Marjorie Taylor Greene wanted to complain that, oh, don't talk to the Democrats, they're communists, she knows the history, but, you know, like most people don't know that it's communists who won the 8-hour workday. It's communists who, you know, granted they crumbled under the weight of, you know, being able to, you know, receive concessions, but it was communist threat of revolution that got the concessions of the New Deal. You know,
that's part of
our American history.
Yeah, that's a lot you're bringing into Santiago, and we could focus on any of several points, very great points you made, but among those I think I would like our audience just to sit and reflect on is a point you made in terms of confusing the individual with the institution and the challenge that face in terms of confronting the realities we face and how do we go beyond that. Part of the conversation, the difficulties in the conversations we're having is the inability to separate the individual from the institutions and being so wrapped up in sense of our identity with the institutions that it becomes more difficult to have transformative conversation, but also to transform our society. I wonder if you have any thought in terms of how these conversations take place, look at the institution of the Supreme Court. 9 individuals, a supermajority of conservatives, and 3 dissenters. What type of conversations take place within that institution? Adam Liptak for the New York Times writes that Justice Jackson is a member of a 3-justice liberal minority, which means she typically does not have much power to affect the outcomes of major cases, but sometimes she may be able to make important contributions at the margins. Do you think it's possible to make contributions at the margins, and is it possible to move institutions in a way, in the direction you would like them to go? What are your thoughts, Santiago?
Well, you know, I think that that's what we really have to be talking about. There's a lot of, you know, I won't name names, but there are other, you know, hosts on KABU who, you know, who complain about the fact that we don't have these, you know, third party sort of conversations except for every 4 years. But the problem is that they're always shut down. And I think that's where it starts. It starts on the fringes. You know, because at the end of the day, you know, leftist politics are forced to the fringes, even though they're the politics that brought us, you know, that brought us civil rights, the politics that brought us LGBTQ rights. But in the sense of preserving capitalism. They are, you know, the radicals such as King are washed of their socialist leanings, and then we're just taught that, oh, you know, he died for the sins of America, and now everything's fine. You know, we need to get back to that place where we understand that people can change, that institutions, you know, that institutions can be corrupted, that there's no, even stuff that we consider generally good, if we don't pay attention to the people and the, you know, the pay attention to where the money's going into the institution, that we can, you know, I mean, it really just comes down to the fact that we just need to be in community with each other. And unfortunately, you know, we've mistaken social media for socializing. You know, we don't, you know, we're in our own echo chambers. You know, I have conversations with people all the time who do hold certain beliefs that grate against, you know, what I feel are, you know, sensible and rational explanations. But at the end of the day, even they understand that, you know, we're all one paycheck away from living in a tent. And if we, you know, put out a ban on daytime camping, we're essentially just shooting ourselves in the foot if we're not helping our brother. You know, and that's where we need to be too. I mean, there's no perfect leftist. There's no, you know, there's no perfect, you know, person who will represent the rights of all people. But we have to be able to, struggle with each other. We have to wrestle with each other. You know, we don't have to. I don't expect everybody I come into contact to agree with every one of my politics. I know when I tell people I'm a communist and a socialist, it kind of grates them the wrong way. But I'm not shy about it. But at the same time, I ask them questions that are pertinent to their existence if we're having those conversations, you know? Like, how much are you making to be able to hold that opinion? You know what I mean? Like, are you really concerned about burger flippers getting $20 an hour? Or are you more upset that you're not getting $30 an hour for a job that you feel is far superior? What are we really talking about here? You know, like the poor people.
Exactly.
You know,
well,
you know,
well,
like poor
thank
people.
You for bringing up those really wonderful points. As usual, you offer us a lot of depth and substance. And we're going to encourage other people to call in and expand on some of those points.
And our numbers are 503-231-8187. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM, with Celeste, and I am Cecil. We're speaking about the Supreme Court of the United States of America as it concluded its session a couple of weeks ago. Where do we go from here? In terms of the rulings the Supreme Court took this term on affirmative action and student loans, and you can just add that on to other rulings that Supreme Court made that tilted the Supreme Court, if you had any doubt, to the right. Yeah, to the right.
Well,
yeah.
You know, I want to echo a couple of points that both you and Santiago, and then, you know, reiterate something I've added. You know, this is about looking at the processes too, and the controlling a narrative. We can't control the narrative because we don't have that kind of media access, and actually, we don't have that kind of access to the attention of the nation. But what we can do is control a narrative and make it more prominent in the arena by just reiterating some key facts. And one is the fact that as this country ages, as it goes through its various pendulum swings, right now we find ourselves under siege from the right. And that means that anything that we used to have as a benefit or as a right even can and will be reexamined and dismantled if possible. Ever since Social Security was instituted, it's been under attack. Okay? And we have to stay vigilant. That's one of my best examples of you never rest on your laurels. I think with some of the rollbacks, we assumed that the what we thought was the obvious importance of certain rights would be sacrosanct. They'd never be touched. So, you know, one of the things that we want to do as we try to stay vigilant and control the narrative is to make sure we have conversations with our circles and then try to build some bridges, because what we need to do now is look, is attack how our court is attacking our rights, and get people aware of how to fight back with that. Now, they are not subject to the same controls as, say, the president. You can't can you impeach?
Yes, you can. they can
impeach. Yeah, Supreme Court, because I was just about to say you can't, and then I remember, no, wait a minute, I think you can, because that's what they're looking to do with, well, that's what the rumblings are for Clarence Thomas. But that is a higher level function than most of us can help, can hope to initiate. I think one of the things we might do is put a lot of pressure, not just on our elected, but look at who is the leadership for our higher education institution and talk to them. Let them know how we feel. That's one thing. Yes, Cecil.
So let us know what you think. 503-231-8187. How do we create this society? Let's hear what George has to say. Good morning, George.
Good morning, George.
Good morning, Sylvester and Cecil. I wonder if we were to agree that one of the most important things we need to do as a planet and as a people in this country and every country is avoid a large-scale nuclear war between the contestants, you know, the usual ones. And one of the things I hear on KABU and other times discussions is that we are discussing things of great importance, the rights of various groups of on their sexual practices. We are discussing things that have really gotten our attention, and we believe deeply that these things must be discussed. But one of the things I worry about is, are we sacrificing the time we should focus on avoiding that final nuclear war as a people and get the discussion on that out to the point where the leaders begin to realize that people don't want to destroy the biosphere of our Earth? And if can we do that as long as we are saying, well, I think first today we need to talk about this or that, and then we can, but we don't get around to putting the pressure on our political leaders all over the world to say, look, kids, you can't have life on this earth as we like it if we have a nuclear war. So let's agree to settle that we must not do that. But how can we do it if we're always talking about other things on the talk shows? So that's my question, and I will hang up and listen. I don't have much more to add, but thank you so much for giving me the time to say this.
Thank you, George, and thank you for raising the issue of not only of policies, but in terms of the survival of the planet. And certainly we are living in crisis times, not only talking about the reality of nuclear destructions, but all of our societies are quite frankly living on the edge because of, and we can sort of like ignore the realities of living under a nuclear cloud, but we cannot avoid the fact that we are living under climate crises. So we are certainly living in an era where our existence is at risk. And I'm not sure the way forward. Celeste, maybe you can.
Well, you know, I don't have any more comfort, I think, for George than you do. And I think you said it very well. Well, here's the thing, though, George. And this is what, you know, and this is not meant disrespectfully, so I'm trying to really watch my words. You know, you can only pick one battle at a time. And fortunately for talk show hosts and some of our audience, we do get to pick some topics that resonate deeply for us. Now, that's not to say that talk show hosts are myopic. You know, we're not short-sighted in the topics we pick, but there are so many battles out there on any given day. You know, it's kind of like battle du jour. You know, what battle are you attacking today? Oh, I'm going to deal with climate change. Oh, I'm going to deal with hunger. Oh, well, you know, if we don't have a planet, we don't need to worry about climate or hunger. So let's worry about nuclear proliferation. I feel you on that. But, you know, it's like, here's something Cecil and I talk about a lot, and I'm sure many of our listeners will agree. It's not the first time we've talked about any of these topics. You know, they're cyclic. We come back and we revisit them. We've talked about affirmative action. We've talked about Clarence Thomas. We talked about Clarence Thomas when he was first being picked for the Supreme Court, and we interviewed people with regard to Anita Hill's concerns about him, you know, and topics get visited. They do. But I can't say that I feel I would be able to bring the same passion to the same topic every time, and I might not be even a quarter as interesting as we could be.
Well, thank you for your honesty, Celeste. But certainly these are topics that we've talked about in the past that we will continue to talk about,
yes.
And important, because until we, if we ignore these, we are at risk of losing our identity or our ability to see other ways of being. So although they may be discouraging, disappointing, and although we could say, is he still sitting on the court after 30 years? Well, yes. And we might have to continue to talk about it and find ways in which to offer alternatives to the realities that we are living in. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. We began this morning by speaking about the Supreme Court, whose term, I want to say, mercifully ended at the end of June, but the destruction continued. Last term, it was over reproductive rights, and this term, it's over things such as affirmative action, student loans, and the rolling back of LGBTQ rights that the Supreme Court just a few years ago affirmed, but now we're seeing those rights also being rolled back. So it's not only things that we thought were settled law, and all of those justices said at their hearings, yes, particularly Roe v. Wade, well, that is settled law. And you say, okay, settled law meaning it can't be changed. Well, not exactly. And so the three justices, and this is why elections matters, the former president, one term, appointed three Supreme Court justices.
Well, let's be real clear on that. He did that with the help and collusion of the sitting Republican legislators.
That's my point, Celeste. Mm-hmm. That one, elections make a difference, and
yes,
regardless
right.
of what you say about consider about this, whether or not the Democrats are too centrist or should be more progressive, elections matter, and the fact
yes.
that a failed twice impeached, what do you call it when you
indicted,
and maybe twice the Republican nominee in a few months.
I hope twice defeated. That's what I'm looking for.
We'll see. Well, let's see.
Once convicted twice and twice defeated. Yeah.
We'll see. Let's go to our callers. And Jonathan has some thoughts for us. Good morning, Jonathan.
Hi. Good morning. I'd like to talk about first education in general. I'm not sure the average person has a clear idea of what education is at all or why they would ever want to go to school. But typically, I think education is equated with earning power or getting a job. And in my mind, that's not education. That's a vocational school. And that's really what people are looking for. They're looking for glorified vocational schools so that they can get a job, probably a powerful job that has a high income. Maybe they'll be an investment banker. Most likely they'll become part of the problem rather than the solution. It's certainly not a liberal arts education that they're looking to get. I don't think they'd even know what that is. And in Harvard in particular, it is kind of perplexing. I mean, the tuition there's at least $75,000 a year for an undergraduate education at Harvard College. So there's a distinction. There's Harvard College and Harvard University. And Harvard University is the graduate school. And Harvard College is the undergraduate school, which purports to be a liberal arts college and that has 6,600 students. But keep in mind that black students and Hispanic students attend universities that typically accept more than three-quarters of their applicants. Harvard does not accept three-quarters of their applicants. They accept a tiny fraction of their applicants. And so you have all these great colleges, great universities, great teachers in the United States that are languishing for lack of attention because for some reason people want to, you know, they have this lottery mentality that they're going to get into these glorified country clubs. Now there's been attention brought to the idea that legacy students have an unfair advantage, and of course they have an unfair advantage. Why shouldn't they have an unfair advantage? It's a country club. It's not really, you know, an egalitarian place. And why anyone would want to go to a school that has that makeup? And frankly, those legacy students are substandard.
So I want you to help clarify your points. You began by talking about the confusion about education as vocational school, and now you're talking about some private institutions as country clubs. Bridge your thoughts together, and how would you like people to respond to what you're saying?
Well, I think there's a cognitive dissonance. First of all, I think that, you know, we're giving places like Harvard way too much credit for giving people good educations. The makeup of the college is not exemplary. There are many places to go where you could get a better education. And frankly, there are many places you could go to get a free education, and most notably in Europe. European countries...
Well, that's kind of out of the reach of most Americans.
Well, you know, what's out of the reach of most Americans is a school that costs $75,000 a year. And frankly, the reason that people don't attend those colleges is frankly because the schools are not close to their home. That is actually a big reason that they're not attending those schools.
So what is your response in terms of education?
You have to have an idea of what educate. I mean, if you go to a school, what do you want to achieve? What do you hope to achieve? If it's to get a job, then that's not a reason to go to school.
And if it's to
and B, we're not going to solve education problems if we have a system of education that doesn't allow people to get educated from a practical standpoint of being affordable and also being close to where they live.
There's a lot of things you're bringing in here, and I would hope that you will clarify. So you talked about We do not know what education is, confusing with vocational training. You also talked some about liberal education and what it is or what it's not. You also mentioned about some schools being unaffordable. And you also talked about just generally we do not know what education is. So define for me what is education and what are steps you think we should go to be educated nation, if that's a goal we should have. So what is education?
Well, let me start by saying what it isn't. It isn't learning.
Well, we don't have that much time, unfortunately.
Well,
we want to make sure we have open for other callers, but you're bringing up good points, but as Cecil said, there's a density. So, you know, if you could just tell us what salient points, what important points you want people to hear about your view of education so we can get those out there.
Well, my view of education is that it's not going to school to become a banker or a lawyer or a dentist. Mm-hmm. That is not education.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. That's a good point, but bear in mind that is your idea of education.
That is an educated person's idea, and typically good.
Okay. 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 We're kind of turning into a circular argument
here. Vocation.
Okay. So we have strayed so far away from the topic right now. I'm going to yank us back, and hopefully, no whiplash will occur. I'm wondering how helpful for it, most people it is to have somebody else tell them what they should want to be educated about.
Should be educated about, then you're not a student. Then you're arrogant.
So, okay. Well, in that case, I'm going to have to say thank you very much for the call, because we're really getting away from the topic we're kind of clouding the issue, but you brought up some good points, and we'll stop with that and say it's really important that we look at what our focus of education is. And thank you so much for your call.
Let's go to Ed is waiting. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm well.
Doing fine. How you doing?
Oh, doing wonderful. You know, despite the whole status of the world. I think one of the biggest things we need to consider is term limits on the SCOTUS Supreme Court.
You broke up. We can't hear.
Sorry. Putting term limits on the Supreme Court.
Oh, okay.
And we the people have to be the deciding factor to that. We're too complacent. There's not enough critical thinking. We're too complacent. As it was stated earlier, you know, the left side of our country, which is Democrats at this point, are the right side of the world.
So, Ed, we're having problems with you. You're breaking up a lot. One point I want our hearers to hear that you are calling for term limits on Supreme Court justices. And if you're still there, do you have a suggestion in terms of how many years they should sit?
16 at most.
16 at most. Okay.
That's two
terms of two-term presidents.
Okay. I like that idea. I agree in general with term limits. Yeah.
But we the people have to institute it. We have to take it back from the politicians. Because what we have, we need term limits on even our Congress and our senators, how many terms they can actually sit.
Right.
That's how we're getting into this situation, is by this guy being elected so many times and creating this narrative of the world going in this one path, and then putting these Supreme Court leaders in, and then sitting there for a lifetime.
All right. Well, are some important points, and some of those requires drastic change in terms of constitutional changes. Some might only depends upon, you just have to change the law. But certainly, yes. Those are issues that we could wrestle with. And certainly, I think a point that you're saying that those of us who are living here in the United States ought to have a say in terms of the type of government we want. And in fact, we can, if we have the political will or the will, begin to move to solutions you suggest, such as a 16-year term limit on Supreme Court justices. Thank you so much for your call. And
yes,
you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO.FM, with Cecil and Celeste on this, the 10th day of July, 2023. We have about 10 minutes left on our program. We're talking about who we are. We're talking, reflecting on the Supreme Court term that just concluded at the end of June and its impact on our daily lives, and particularly we talked about rulings in terms of affirmative action and student loans. Several callers shared their perspective about what we should do about those issues, and in terms of the way in which one caller had a lengthy conversation about what it means to be educated and what we should seek in education. Other callers had other issues, emphases as well. What are your thoughts about the Supreme Court, and where do we go from here? Our numbers are 503-231-8187. And are there any, in addition, are there any bright spots, I suppose, Supreme Court? Yeah, go ahead.
I wanted to kind of suggest some other things, you know, because some of the suggestions people have made are good suggestions, but they, as you said, require a higher level of access and function that the average person can utilize. But, you know, I suggested we contact our state-run educational facilities, higher educational facilities, and let them know how we feel about the importance of a diverse student body and faculty and affirmative action, and not just them, you know, but our state electeds. And then we've seen that corporate America, with all of its capitalistic leanings, is a greedy entity and wants our money. Well, you know, they'll pander to us, and we can kind of direct how they pander to us by saying, you know, how about you start supporting affirmative action? Now, people will say, well, they don't respond. Yes, they do. All you have to do is look at what Anheuser-Busch, for example, or Target is doing with response to outcries from various camps and constituencies. And you can see how they will. They'll change their approach because they want to make that money. They don't want to lose the customers. And, you know, and so maybe we don't need so much Juneteenth ice cream. Maybe we don't need so much NASCAR T-shirts, you know, or this vehicle being named after some group. Maybe what we want to tell corporations is like, look, how about you start putting your weight in your name behind the need for affirmative action. We know you believe in affirmative action. Why? Because you'll show us every color of human being to get our money, you know. Wow. And it's a matter of retooling and reapproaching these transactions that we have, not only economically, but in terms of how we galvanize each other for issues that's going to make this whole approach work. I mean, that's essentially what SCOTUS did when they said, oh, no, it's no longer settled law. We're going to bring it back and retool it. Well, we can do the same thing.
Yeah, we can do the same things. And also, we can just reflect on the Supreme Court's ruling, affirmative action ruling. And, you know, this summer, while you know, taking your vacation, lying on the beach, just pick up the the Supreme Court rulings and see what the justices had to say, because it's convoluted in many ways. For example, the Supreme Court sort of like exempted military academies from this affirmative action because somehow it's okay for to have diversity in the military, but you can't have this diversity within the educational systems. And so it is it is strange, and it requires us to be persistent. And I think that there's a lot of work that we still have to do.
A lot of work, you know, but don't be discouraged. Just, you know, look at how your particular circle moves and figure out how you can exert some influence and build some bridges. And then again, yes, we can write letters to, you know, SCOTUS, and we can write letters to our federal level electeds and what have you. But, you know, they've got blinders on and they have an agenda and they're running breakneck speed. What we need to do is dial it back a little bit. And as Cecil said earlier, when he referenced elections, look at the inner circles for how we can influence things, because it's of the circles that we move in closer to home that we have the strongest influence. So again, you know, look at the universities in your state, in your city, and make sure that you let them know how you value things like affirmative action. And also for your local electeds to push for student loan forgiveness. Now, you know, $10,000 when middle class folks are trying to shoulder $70,000 of debt per year or more, you know, is not a lot, but it's helpful. And that money can be re-entered into our economic circle, if you will. It doesn't, I know people are arguing about, you know, 10,000 isn't a lot. That's important, but that's not the issue. The issue is that do we value the education and the contributions these people can make enough to have a cheaper education for them, a more accessible education? That's what I want to say. Mm-hmm. But anyway, let's see. We got like 4 minutes. Anything you want to say to wrap up, Cecil?
Well, again, I would just encourage people to read the Supreme Court rulings, and specifically the dissent of Justice Jackson. I think if there's anything that is good from the Supreme Court session, is the fact that the three dissenters will lay a groundwork in their dissent in terms of how we will begin to address some of these issues. And not only the eloquence, but the reasoning of these justices will lay the groundwork so that in future generations, students, law students, justices, will be able to build upon what they're saying. And just in terms of this affirmative action, Justice Jackson, right, the point is this: given our history, the origin of persistent race-linked gaps should be no mystery. It has never been a deficiency of Black Americans' desires or ability to, in Frederick Douglass' words, stand on their own feet. This cry against affirmative action shall be resisted, and not only within the hallowed halls of the Supreme Court by the three, but on the outside by millions of enraged and morally encouraged people to cry out for justice. It's a heavy load, but it's nothing new. It's a continuation of who we are as a society.
Absolutely. And as our mothers have told us, life is maintenance. So stay vigilant so that we can maintain these rights that we have. And in addition to staying vigilant, I would love to encourage you to stay engaged with your community connection, KBOO Portland. Support us, not just financially, but by telling people about us and showcasing why you listen to KBOO. And then if you are so inclined, you can always get involved. More information at our website, www.kboo.fm. Thanks, Ray, our engineer. Thank you, Cecil, for your sound and sage reasoning and conversation. And thank you to all of those who are listening and who called in for supporting your community connection, KBOO, and More Talk Radio. Stay tuned to the Old Mode Variety Hour. Coming up next.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
3 summers ago, Portlanders stood united in demanding changes to the Institution of Policing and the Portland Police Bureau. Since then, the Police Accountability Commission has been building a proposal for a new voter-mandated, civilian-led police oversight system. For the July edition of Totality of Circumstances, members of the PAC will be live in the KBOO studio to field your questions and comments before their final plan goes to the City Council at the end of August. Tune in and give us a call on Tuesday, July 25th from 5 to 6 p.m. or send us an email at totalityradio@gmail.com. That's totalityradio@gmail.com or join us live on Tuesday, July 25th from 5 to 6 p.m.
KBOO Community Radio is now on Venmo.